Jhené and Golic Jr., the podcast.
The beats are hot. Jhené and Golic Jr. today, featuring Tyler Foljam and Monica McNutt, hosts of Game Night on ESPN Radio Sunday evenings. We're filling in right now for Jhené and Mike Golic Jr. As the Music City Bowl is what you were supposed to hear on ESPN Radio, a matchup in Nashville between the Missouri Tigers and the Iowa Hawkeyes, but that game canceled due to COVID, and so now we are with you, and we appreciate you sticking with us on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80. All guests on ESPN Radio appear via the Goodyear Hotline, and our guest right now joining us as it is just a few minutes after 5 o'clock p.m. on the East Coast, none other than Dave McMiniman, brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Dave, of course, the ESPN Lakers reporter. And Dave, first and foremost, happy holidays to you. Appreciate you taking the time to join us on this Wednesday. How have the holidays been for you as the NBA season has just begun?
Hey, Tyler and Monica, happy holidays to both of you too as well. They've been okay. I work. Working out the last 16 Christmases, I've been at an NBA arena covering a game. So this was, in a way, a nice return to normalcy, being in an NBA arena, working on Christmas Day, of course, missing the 20,000 fans that normally would accompany that experience. But, you know, this is the time of year. NBA basketball signifies the holidays for me.
Well, we appreciate all that hard work you and your peers have been doing to bring us NBA coverage and what has been a trying year in the bubble, out of the bubble with the COVID protocols, all that good stuff. Just happy that we have basketball to watch. By the way, you can follow Dave McMiniman on Twitter at McTen. That's at McTen. Today, a big day for none other than the King, LeBron James. It is his 36th birthday. He, by the way, 3 months younger than I. He's accomplished just a little bit more than I have in his 36 years on planet Earth. But I'm happy to share a birthday year with him in 1984. Not only is it LeBron's birthday, but shout out, happy birthday, Tiger Woods, another GOAT, his 45th birthday. But you're here to talk LeBron. Dave, if you could get LeBron anything for his birthday to help him win another title, to just make him happy, whatever you want to, however you want to couch it, what would you get LeBron, a guy who's probably got everything in the world, what would you get LeBron for his 36th birthday?
Yeah, your producer kind of joked about that right before we went on air. My job is to give him thought-provoking questions.
Ah.
So that's what I will continue to give him. And it's not only on his birthday that he gets them from me. Sometimes he'll get them in February or in June or whatever. So no, not, you know, that's not really the whole athlete-reporter relationship exchanging gifts. So we'll just stick to questions. And then he can give me a gift, and that would be a wonderful answer.
So that's exactly the type of transaction that we need from you, Dave, and LeBron. How about this then? If we look at this Lakers season and the interesting offseason, the fact that it was so short, the overhaul to their roster, some guys coming in to help LeBron kind of alleviate the offensive load, but they sacrificed maybe a little bit of defense. Gone Danny Green, gone Avery Bradley, gone Dwight Howard. These were guys that had, you know, defensive chops. They did bring in a former Defensive Player of the Year in Marc Gasol, but he's at the end of his career. How do you kind of see this team measuring up defensively with the personnel they have this year versus last year? Because it was that defense that won them the championship. Let's not get it twisted. Yeah, they could score, but defensively, they're one of the best in the game, anchored by Anthony Davis. Do you see it being a work in progress with these new pieces, getting to know Frank Vogel's system and scheme, or do you think the Lakers and Rob Pelinka were happy to trade some defense for a little more help for LeBron and AD offensively?
Work in progress is a great way to term it. They only had a 7-week offseason. They only had 9 days worth of practices during the preseason. They only had 4 preseason games, 2 of which LeBron and AD didn't play in. So we haven't seen the team that they're going to be. But when you get rid of Dwight Howard, you get rid of JaVale McGee, you are sacrificing rim protection. The guys they brought in, there's defensive intelligence that comes with Marc Gasol. He's a space eater, but he doesn't have the lateral quickness nor the jumping ability that those guys had. And Montrezl Harrell actually has a lateral quickness, but he doesn't have the verticality that those guys had in terms of height, and is more apt to try to make that defensive stop by sacrificing his body and taking a charge rather than going for a block shot. So they got to change up their schemes. They got to get to know one another. To me, though, if Anthony Davis plays at the level he did last year, it won't be a problem. And this year, he has been slow to return to form. I mean, he is still so talented that his averages aren't that far off the what Lakers fans are accustomed to, but he did have that right calf contusion that caused him to miss one of their four games so far. And the other night against the Blazers, he didn't look in sync on either end of the floor. I anticipate a bounce back game from him, but when he plays with the defensive intensity that he's capable of, and he can lock down on the perimeter and protect at the rim, it's something that trickles down to the rest of the roster. And quite frankly, LeBron, too. LeBron feeds off the energy of Anthony Davis, and that's when they're at their best. So as one Lakers source told me a couple weeks ago, it'll give us a month, and then things will start to look right because they are trying to build towards June and July when the NBA Finals are going to be occurring. And that's going to be about getting everybody's bodies right before they kind of rip off the governor and let everybody, you know, go full bore on the defensive and offensive end.
Well, so I have contended, Dave, that yes, the season is underway, but really around MLK holiday, I think we'll start to see less craziness and more of what you're talking about across the league, right? Like teams gelling and really kind of coming into their own in terms of identity. The wonky scores and even the Lakers loss to the Clippers kind of to start the season. How, like, you've covered the league for years now. You're not alarmed by anything you've seen or have any results to kind of alarm you to this point in the season?
Monica, not all that much. And so that means that we are currently having a Syracuse guy agreeing with a Georgetown girl. So that's amazing in itself.
That's 2020 for you.
2021. Yeah. But I think what I've seen so far has been a lot of teams trying to find their rhythm, trying to work in their new players, their rookies, without having a ton of training camp. And Dame Lillard brought up this point when I spoke to him over Zoom at Shootaround the other day, and why there have been so many blowouts. And he feels like the lack of a crowd has played a part in that, because if a team starts flat, it's hard for them to find that second gear and rely on the energy of the crowd to find it. And teams are kind of, once they build that initial burst, are able to ride that. And that will be an adjustment here, because I did cover the basketball down in the bubble, but that wasn't regular season basketball. You know, mm-hmm. There was the seeding round, but it was the playoffs. So there's an intensity that's inherent to the playoffs, whether there's fans there or not. But when you're at the base of the mountain, game one, looking up at the summit, game 72, it's hard to find that intensity in that meeting. And I think that's contributing to some of these lopsided scores we're seeing.
Yeah, I do think that is an interesting dynamic for the players. The bubble was one thing. Now they're in these massive arenas and there's no fans. You know, the arenas they were playing down at Walt Disney World were not, you know, made for 20,000, 25,000 people. A little bit smaller size venues. So certainly I think an adjustment period for the players. But again, obviously we're just grateful that there are NBA games being played, that we are getting football games in at both the collegiate and the NFL level, and hope to have baseball and hockey returning soon. I'm going to get you out of here on this one real quickly, Dave. Back to the Lakers specifically. I looked at the moves they made this offseason, and I said, man, I think this team's better on paper than they were the team that won the championship a season ago. The biggest threat to the LA Lakers repeating this season, real quickly, what team, what narrative, what things would be the biggest threat to the Lakers?
The Brooklyn Nets. And that's with or without a James Harden deal going down. The Brooklyn Nets have as deep a team as the Lakers do.
Yep.
And if Kyrie and KD are healthy, they have as talented as a top two as the Lakers do. Now, I think the Lakers have a slight edge there, you know, of course, with the continuity of LeBron and AD, and also with the overall physical prowess that both those guys can possess on the defensive end compared to those other two. But, you know, Kevin Durant is a top 10 player of all time.
Oh yeah.
If he probably finished today, and he's only building on that. And he's reminding everyone that whatever dirt was thrown on his name for his decision to go to Golden State. And, you know, we could talk about that for a 4-hour show. Pluses and minuses of that one.
I'll pass on that conversation again.
Yeah. He's just that good.
Yeah.
And if Kevin Durant is going to be that guy and give him help on the offensive and defensive end there, I believe, barring health, and I will literally knock on wood right here, I think that's the matchup that the Lakers have to look out for, and the benefit for them is they wouldn't face them until the NBA Finals.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, if you want to watch both teams, the Lakers and the Nets are in action tonight. Brooklyn taking on the surprising Atlanta Hawks in a game that has a 240 total in Las Vegas. It's supposed to be a shootout between Kyrie, KD, and Trae Young. And the Lakers start a little road trip in San Antonio against DeMar DeRozan and the Spurs. Lakers favored by 6 tonight. LeBron James, I think, questionable, but he surprisingly played against Portland. We'll see if he's out there tonight against the San Antonio Spurs. So both those teams in action, and that was our guy, Dave McMiniman, ESPN LA Lakers reporter, joining us here on Shanae and Golic Jr. Dave, we appreciate you taking the time out of your day. Have an enjoyable New Year holiday. I hope your holiday season has been good to this point, and we appreciate the hard work you do covering the Lakers for ESPN.
Of course, same to both of you. Glad to join you guys.
Thanks, Dave.
All aboard the coaching carousel. Shanae and Golic Jr. still with you on ESPN Radio. Coming up, which NFL vacancies will be filled in the coming months or weeks, and which are the most desirable vacancies at the head coaching spot in the NFL?
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio today, hosted by Tyler Fulgham and Monica McNutt. ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, Sirius XM Channel 80 is how you can listen. We appreciate you tuning in. Of course, you were supposed to be listening to the Music City Bowl at this time on ESPN Radio. Unfortunately, that game got canceled between the Iowa Hawkeyes and Missouri Tigers due to the coronavirus. So we're filling in for Shanae and Golic Jr. here, taking you all the way to the 7 p.m. hour on the East Coast, 4 p.m. on the West Coast. A reminder that all guests appear via the Goodyear hotline, and you can holler at us, 1-888-SAY-ESPN. That's 1-888-729-3776. Call us and share your thoughts, opinions, feelings on anything that we discuss here on Shanae and Golic Jr. Now, though, Monica, it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Let's move to the National Football League, and we've been talking about Week 17, do-or-die situations. I will correct myself yet again that it is the Chicago Bears who have more control over their destiny, so to speak, than the Arizona Cardinals. Win against the Packers, and they are in. If they lose, they can get in by virtue of the Rams beating the Arizona Cardinals. The Cardinals have to win and get a little bit of help in certain scenarios. So that's just the way the NFC is playing out, which we have discussed. However, for the teams that haven't made the postseason, for those fan bases, Monica, in Atlanta, in Houston, in New York, in Detroit, all around the country that need to find optimism in the future, whether it be a first overall draft pick, hello Jacksonville, whether it be replacing a head coach, that's where I want to take this conversation. Because there's some interesting vacancies around the National Football League right now. The Atlanta Falcons fired Dan Quinn. Raheem Morris, has been their interim head coach. Houston let Bill O'Brien out the door, and Romeo Crennel's been filling in there. Matt Patricia gone from the Detroit Lions. Adam Gase, I have to imagine, is going to be gone from the Jets. Maybe the same can be said for Doug Marrone down in Jacksonville. So you have these interesting vacancies where, let's take Houston, for instance. They have a franchise quarterback. They have Deshaun Watson, who is one of the best in the business. Like, that would seem to be an attractive job, though we've seen reports in the media come out about the politicking and the culture of how that organization is organized that may not be desirable. Of course, if you get a head coaching job, if Doug Marrone loses his with Jacksonville, you have the first overall pick and ostensibly Trevor Lawrence at your disposal. The Jets, who have the number 2 overall pick, have that big market and some exciting young pieces on the defensive side of the ball. If you get a Justin Fields, a Zach Wilson, a Mac Jones, a Kyle Trask, I don't know who they would like at number 2, but there's options there. Same can be said for places like Atlanta and Detroit as well. We have some notable candidates, most of them minority notable candidates, like Eric Bieniemy, Marvin Lewis, Robert Saleh. a defensive coordinator for the San Francisco 49ers. Is there a name out there in your eyes, Monica, that you think deserves to be a head coach in the National Football League? Is there a vacancy that stands out as enticing to you? To me, the name that I focus on is Eric Bieniemy, who's been the right-hand man for Andy Reid in this Kansas City Chiefs offense the last few years, has helped mold Patrick Mahomes, has helped Andy Reid cultivate game plans that have them as the reigning Super Bowl champs and maybe one of the most unstoppable offenses the National Football League has ever seen. The fact that he hasn't gotten an opportunity yet to this point to me is disappointing. I would be shocked if he doesn't have an opportunity in 2021, although I say that, and how often are we shocked that a coach of color is not given the same opportunity as some of his peers? So Bieniemy needs to be a head coach. If he gets that opportunity, I'll be happy for him. But what stands out to you for some of the names that are floating around and some of the vacancies, maybe more specifically, in the National Football League that might be attractive if you are an aspiring head coach?
So I agree with you. Bieniemy is the first name because I think that's the name that we heard last year. And yep. To your point, we always have this conversation. We may have heard this name. No, definitely heard it last year coming off of the Super Bowl, but I feel like this is something that's been on the radar if you're in NFL circles. Beyond Eric Bieniemy, I actually am having a blast on ESPN.com. There's a tremendous feature story. The writers are terrific, but the graphics are also so much fun. You can switch the coaches and the teams, and then there's a grade for the matchup.
Oh.
So one of the other names that I really am intrigued by in this graphic or in the story is Byron Leftwich, who is currently with the Bucks, right?
He's the offensive coordinator there with Bruce.
He's the OC with the Bucks. I mean, he's a guy that obviously has actual NFL experience. Another candidate of color has been looking to climb the ranks of coaching since he joined Bruce Arians as an intern in Arizona in 2016. So I'd love to see him get a chance. But then I also will say, and I remember when Atlanta made the call, Arthur Blank. I was like, why am I blanking on the owner's name? When Arthur Blank decided to go separate ways with the GM and the head coach, and Raheem Morris was promoted to interim head coach. And you do your research, you're digging into Raheem Morris, and I thought back to his time in Tampa, which, while it wasn't glamorous, that first year there, he showed some promise. He was even on the staff in Washington, which is my hometown. I can't remember the years, but before he got to Tampa. So Raheem, to me, is a really interesting case because Atlanta has not exactly made a 180. I always say 360, and that's too many turns. But I do think we've seen more life about the group than we had previously. I mean,
oh,
I think
big time.
Definitely. They got
big time. Like their defense was, and that's what Dan Quinn's calling card was, Raheem Morris the same. Their defense was awful under Dan Quinn. That's why they were losing games. Their defense has gotten way better under Raheem Morris. Look what they just went to Kansas City and held the Chiefs to 17 points. Like,
I was about to say that. Yep.
I think Morris is, if he's not coaching in Atlanta next year, that'd be a shame. But the job he's done with the Falcons and turning that defense around, to me, warrants consideration for other teams around the NFL.
Yeah, and so he's on this list with a bunch of teams you can slide around. It's really cool. I would encourage folks at home to go and check it out. But what I will say, T.Y., is when I look at this conversation, especially the Raheem Morris case, and Kimberly Martin, who does a tremendous job for ESPN as an NFL reporter, crushed it on First Take today. I listened to her on a podcast, and I think she may have tweeted about this. I don't remember, but I know she said it on a podcast. Arthur Blank was asked about whether or not Raheem Morris would have an opportunity to contend for the head coaching position. And he sort of jokingly said, if the team goes undefeated or if they get to the Super Bowl, right? And while I don't think he meant anything by it, because I also listened to Arthur Blank on a delightful podcast called Huddle and Flow with Jim Trotter and Steve Weich. And he actually talked about that exchange and that he didn't mean anything. But the thing for Kim and Jim and Steve was to point out, even in that lighthearted joke, like there's an undercurrent to it, right? And so I say all
you're
that
setting
to say
an impossible standard for
exactly
him. He's got to make it to
exactly
the Super Bowl. What?
Exactly. So I say all that to say I am proud of this conversation happening in earnest, and I am proud of GMs, owners who really want to do their diligence, because to me the pipeline of going and looking for the next Cliff Kingsbury or Sean McVay or these young hot shots, like I am not saying that they have not done their work, although in some cases, if you were to compare resumes, you could argue that there's some inherent bias here that they're benefiting from. But I do think if we're going to be serious about some of the uncomfortable moments that were created in 2020, where we had to have some real conversations across our spaces, whatever our sports may be or in our lives, whatever, then this is how you do it. You have to do this in earnest. You have to look at people who have put in the time and for whatever reason have not gotten a fair shake or a fair look at the opportunity. So I'm excited and thrilled to see all of these names of candidates of color on this particular list. And I just hope that folks do their due diligence in their search.
Agree wholeheartedly. I think there's other potential vacancies that could come. Who knows if Doug Peterson is still coaching the Eagles after another disappointing season. That's one that people are talking about. Anthony Lynn, his job, he's done with the Chargers. You know, not exactly lauded for some of his in-game strategies and things of that nature. I think some other potential candidates like Urban Meyer's name being thrown around. Jim Harbaugh's out at Michigan. Yeah, no, Marvin Lewis maybe getting back in the game. And Marvin never had playoff success, but his teams were always in the playoffs, which is to say a lot more than some of these other coaches. So certainly interesting to see how the coaching carousel will play out this offseason with all of the context and nuance surrounding these teams with, again, potential draft picks, franchise quarterbacks, cap space, markets, all that is great stuff. And that was a great conversation. It was Straight Talk, presented by Straight Talk Wireless. No contract, no compromise. Coming up here on Shanae and Golic Jr. featuring Tyler Fulgham and Monica McNutt on Wednesday, we're going to take another look at the Rose Bowl as the college football playoff semifinals quickly approach. That's next. You're listening to ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
It is Shanae and Golic Jr. featuring today Tyler Fulgham and Monica McNutt, two-thirds of the squad you hear Sunday evenings on ESPN Radio, alongside Ashley Brewer on game night. ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and Sirius XM Channel 80 is how we are coming to you. Of course, ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance, and all guests on ESPN Radio appear via the Goodyear Hotline. Our guest right now, Monica, none other than John Tulte, senior sports editor and SEC insider at AL.com. And you can find him on Twitter at JTALTY. John, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here on this Wednesday. Pardon me. Hope the holiday season has been good to you thus far, especially since we have college football to cover and significant bowl games. I know that's a big plus for college football fans and for the media that work in the industry. I want to start with this when it comes to the Alabama Crimson Tide. We were talking a little bit earlier with Barrett Jones, who's an alum, with Forrest Conley, who covers college football, and I believe it was Forrest early and Golic Jr. this afternoon, who said he believes this Alabama offense is as good or better than the LSU offense that we saw last year obliterate everyone in football. Joe Burrow won the Heisman. Justin Jefferson is obviously proving how great he was in college by how great he is in the National Football League. Clyde Edwards-Helaire was unstoppable. Joe Brady was dialing things up. He's now in the NFL with the Carolina Panthers. So I'm just curious to hear your thoughts on that assertion that this Bama offense in 2020 is actually as good or even better than that record-setting offense we saw last year in Baton Rouge.
Year was incredible, and I think ultimately, you know, whether we can say Alabama is at that level will probably depend on, you know, what happens this Friday, and again, you know, if they win this Friday against Notre Dame, you know, whether they're able to win the national championship, which I think, you know, just really kind of solidified LSU's offense, you know, as one of the greatest ever based on what they were able to do. But if you think about just, you know, how incredible this offense is, they lost two first-round wide receivers last year. They lost a first-round quarterback last year, and yet are seemingly better than they were last year. You know, they have two guys who will be first-round picks at wide receiver again, and Jalen Waddle and Devonta Smith. Certainly seems like Devonta Smith is trending to be the next Heisman winner. You have Mac Jones, who's probably going to finish either second or third in the Heisman, who has done a terrific job replacing Tua Tagovailoa. And you can honestly make the argument that he's been even better than Tua was last year. Najee Harris, I think, is by far one of the best running backs in the country. He was really, I think, solidified his status for the NFL after coming back for his senior season. And I think the offensive line is one of the best in the country. And so this offense, I think, entering into the season, there might have been a couple questions, you know, losing all that big talent from last year, not knowing what Mac Jones was going to be able to do this year. but they have more than exceeded expectations. They have been incredible all year round. And, you know, just to top it off, you know, they have one of the best offensive coordinators in the country, and Steve Sarkisian, who just won the Broyles Award as the nation's top assistant.
Man, that an embarrassment of riches, shall we call it? I do want to switch gears just a little bit, though, John. I want to go Clemson, who will be without their offensive coordinator for their matchup as we enter the CFP. Big deal, small deal, not a deal, because, you know, next man up, including when it happens to be a coach.
I think it's medium deal. I don't know if that was an option, but that's the one I'll take. just because I think, I mean, on one hand, Tony Elliott is very highly regarded. You know, people believe he will be a head coach really when he wants to be. You know, one of the better offensive coordinators in the country, has done a terrific job this year, you know, being the primary offensive coordinator after sharing some of those duties with Jeff Scott in the past. But the one thing that I do think helps a little bit is this year, more than any other year, every team has been preparing for things like this. You know, just because of COVID and coaches getting knocked out through contact tracing or testing positive, there's been a lot of kind of backup plans set up in advance should the head coach, should the offensive coordinator, should the wide receivers coach, you know, not be able to coach in a game. So I think, you know, a year or two ago, if you're missing your offensive coordinator for a big game like this, you know, people would be freaking out. But I think because teams have had to adjust so much this year, and because, you know, there's already kind of plans in place to, all right, if this happens, here are the people that are going to probably slide into these roles, it helps a little bit, not, you know, in terms of not being the chaos that there might be in previous years. So I think it's certainly a notable development. It's unfortunate for Clemson. It's unfortunate for Tony. You obviously hope he's okay. But I think Clemson overall is going to be all right.
Hey, John, I'm not sure, so I'll ask you live here. Do you have a Heisman vote? Are you a Heisman voter?
I do not, but one of my colleagues, I guess actually a couple of my colleagues do.
Okay, the reason why, I was just going to ask you how you kind of handicap the Heisman right now. In Vegas, Caesars William Hill, Devontae Smith, you were talking about, minus 260 favorite. Mac Jones is plus 190, Trevor Lawrence plus 550. How are you handicapping the Heisman going this year? Is the winner, in your eyes, the man who's going to get the most votes? Is it Devontae Smith, or is one of those underdogs who can provide value for bettors a better investment, so to speak?
Yeah, I think your opportunity to get value in Devonta Smith as a Heisman was probably a month or so ago.
Yeah.
I think it's probably a little too late, but at this point, but I do think it's trending his way. You know, and I think I can't quite pinpoint it. I don't know if it's maybe just that this year has been so crazy and so unprecedented that people like the idea of something new. As you know, both of you, I'm sure know, you know, wide receivers are not typically in the mix for Heisman. You've had, you know, Amari Cooper was a finalist. I think he finished a distant third a few years back. Larry Fitzgerald had a shot. He didn't win. You know, typically this is a quarterback award with the occasional running back thrown in. And so I think people like the idea of doing something new this year. And I think just the way that Devonta Smith has played all year, and then even after Jalen Waddle went down, and people, you know, believe Waddle might have been the best offensive player they had, when he went down, Smith really just elevated his play even more. So I think Smith is your favorite for a reason headed into that final, you know, decision, I think, which is what, next Tuesday. But it wouldn't shock me if, you know, somebody like Trevor Lawrence won as kind of a career achievement type award. And if maybe, you know, some of the Bama guys had their votes split up a little bit. But, you know, if I had to make a guess right now, I think Smith is your Heisman.
Is John Talty, senior sports editor and insider. L.com. John, we appreciate you taking the time. A happy and safe holiday season and new year, and we look forward to enjoying your coverage of the college football playoff all year long.
Thanks so much. I really appreciate both of you having me on.
All right, still to come here on Shanae and Golic Jr. featuring Tyler and Monica on a Wednesday. One NFL team just cleared their fan base to return at a limited capacity for the NFL postseason. Monica, it may be one of the most raucous fan bases that we have in the entire NFL. Could that be a factor in helping their squad reach the Super Bowl? We're going to talk NFL postseason next on Shanae and Golic Jr. This is ESPN Radio and the ESPN app.
Shanae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Shanae and Golic Jr., today featuring Tyler Fulgham and Monica McNutt, filling in for our homegirl Shanae and our homeboy Mike Golic Jr. Monica McNutt and I, of course, two-thirds of the Game Night crew on Sunday evening with Ashley Brewer. We appreciate you listening to us this Wednesday, ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, or Sirius XM Channel 80. However, we are coming to your ears. Reiner, you can holler at us, 1-888-SAY-ESPN, 1-888-729-3776. Always love to hear from our listeners. I know fans of Buffalo are going to like to hear this. Let's go, Buffalo! The Bills, Monica, will host
their
first
song.
Oh yeah, that's when Buffalo scores.
Oh, okay.
I got a few. Right. I got a few Bills Mafia friends and fam.
Got it.
I work with a few. I had some homegirls back in Chicago that were Buffalo fans from Buffalo, that type of thing. And yeah, Buffalo Bills Mafia is a real thing. And okay. When they score, the song goes off. It's a real thing. Oh, there you see it.
Oh, okay.
Let's go, Buffalo. Let's go, Buffalo.
Oh, wow. Yep. I didn't. That's, okay. Didn't make the correlation.
That is their jam. That is their beat. Anyways, we know Buffalo has an offense that likes to score a lot this year, led by Josh Allen and Steph Diggs. And now yeah. Bills Mafia is going to get a chance to see that high powered offense in person as the Bills host a playoff game for the first time in 25 years. Check this out, Monica. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced Wednesday that the Bills Stadium will be open to a limited number of fans, 6,700 and change, for the team's playoff game. The plan is to allow for those 6,772 fans to be tested prior to the game, with fans needing to register a negative test before entrance. The team will work with the state's Department of Health to conduct contact tracing afterwards. Fans will have to be socially distanced and, of course, wear masks. And then anyone not complying with that will be kicked out. So I wonder, with this, does that improve Buffalo's chances of advancing through the AFC postseason and maybe to the Super Bowl? I wonder aloud, is this the biggest benefit to any team? Bills Mafia having their fans be able to come to, it used to be called the Ralph, I don't know what it is now, up there in Buffalo, but do you consider any fan base, Monica, around the National Football League to be on par with or better than Bills Mafia?
Yeah, well, first of all, let's acknowledge the full circle element here, because Bills Mafia, not too long ago, was just getting clowned for diving on tables and into small fires and being ridiculous at their tailgates.
I think they were kind of being celebrated for that, that they were that active and boisterous despite the fact that the Bills weren't, you know, winning a bunch of Super Bowls.
Do you really think it was a celebration?
Squirting mustard and ketchup all over one another and freezing.
I don't know that it was celebrated. It was certainly part
maybe
of the conversation.
Maybe mocked a little bit. Maybe mocked a little bit.
Now you're coming over to reality. anyway, so yeah. Do I think Bills Mafia, that passion, yeah, in the midst of your team stinking up the joint? Yeah, but I feel like we've had quite a few teams that have stunk up the joint and their fans remain loyal. I think of the Browns. I am a Washington Football Team fan. I don't know. I think we're a little bit more fickle than Bills Mafia and the Dog Pound, for sure. But the 12th man comes to mind immediately.
Sure. Up in Seattle, you got Chiefs Kingdom. They are always loud and proud inside Arrowhead. Raiders fans from Oakland and now maybe in Las Vegas. I don't know. Certainly back in
weird.
Oakland with the black hole. No doubt
back
about that.
Back in the day. Woo! Black hole
no
is elite.
No question. All right, still to come here on Shanae and Golic Jr. There's a lot on the line going into week 17 of the NFL season. Who will punch their ticket to the postseason? We'll break it down. The best Sunday matchups next. You're listening to Shanae and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN.
Thanks for listening to Shanae and Golic Jr. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review. You can hear the show live weekdays at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, ESPN News, and wherever you stream your audio.